Aside from any Japanese survivors, Prince was, he felt sure, the last one out. But there was one more. All during the raid, Edwin Rose, a deaf Englishman, had been sitting at the latrine, struggling with a bad case of dysentery. He was unaware of the maelstrom swirling around him. Somehow he missed all the shooting and the explosions and the salutations of the Rangers. Rose was an elderly civilian who had lived in Toronto. He'd been a purser on a British ship plying between Hong Kong and Singapore. He was a sweet but slightly skittish gentleman of 65 years with downy white hair. His vision was depleted from vitamin deficiencies, and his mind was generally addled by his years in prison. As another POW who knew Rose put it, Edwin wasn't all there. His elevator didn't go to the top floor. Sometime that night, after Captain Prince ignited his flare and departed, Edwin Rose's eyes blinked open. Confused, he fumbled his way back to his barracks. He had no idea that the camp sat in ruins, the gate breached, the paths littered with corpses. Rose would awaken sometime on the morning of the 31st to find the camp faintly smoldering. Finally, it dawned on him that the Americans had come to fetch the prisoners, that he'd somehow missed the boat. Rose didn't panic. He shaved and cleaned himself up, and then put on his best clothes. He gathered a few of his belongings and then strolled out to the front gate, where he was soon intercepted by a band of Filipino guerrillas who happened to be passing along the main road. "I knew somebody would come," Rose said cheerfully. At 8:40, Captain Prince and the last of the prisoners had reached the cat-tailed banks of the Pampanga River. The bedraggled caravan of men and beasts stretched to Platero, 2 miles away. To the east, Pahota's gunfight was still in progress, but had diminished in intensity. The threat of a Japanese pursuit lingered, but with Pahota's men holding the road admirably, and with the hindmost section of the column now fording the river, the Rangers had good cause to be sanguine. After everyone had crossed over, Prince shot a second signal flare into the skies. This beacon was intended for Pahota and Hosen. It was a signal for them to withdraw from their positions and slowly fall back to Platero, where they would be needed as scouts and armed escorts for the 25-mile exodus to the American lines. Captain Hosen, fortunately, had not engaged the enemy forces. In fact, he hadn't seen a hint of them. Since 7:30, when he and his men had set up the roadblock, his stretch of Highway 5 had been a lonely strip of tarmac. With the phone lines cut, the commanders of the 7,000-man Japanese garrison in Cabanatuan City had apparently remained unaware of the raid. Not having to worry about defending himself, Hosen could thus heed Prince's flare and easily remove his forces to Platero post-haste. Captain Pahota would not have that luxury. His withdrawal would necessarily be a much more complicated and delicate procedure, one that would require several hours to complete. By this time, Platero was a crowded way station, bustling with gleeful shouts and laughter. Several hundred prisoners and rangers were already ensconced there, and Captain Hosen's forces formed a tight ring around the town to guard against the Japanese incursion. Musi announced that the column would take a half-hour break, so that the men and Carabao could get water and a brief rest. The rangers offered chocolates and American cigarettes to the POWs. Or, one should say, to the ex-POWs, while local Filipinos circulated fruits and coconut cakes, crying, "Mabuhay!"